For the past couple of weeks, I and other Refuge staff members have been on the go-go-go with classroom visits promoting the Alaska Migratory Bird Calendar Contest, and that will continue for the next week and a half or so. As we try to visit with as many area schools and classes as want to hear about this time-honored, specific to rural Alaska conservation effort. Something I tried to emphasize during my presentations, especially to the younger students, is that the contest is about migratory birds. For example, this year I've used robins and chickadees a lot to make a point. Both songbirds are common to southwest Alaska, but the robin is migratory and the chickadee is not. Therefore, the kids should concentrate on birds like robins when creating posters or writing about birds. One specific group of birds that is sometimes talked about is seabirds. Seabirds are birds that spend almost all of their time on or near the sea. In fact, many spend the winter months hundreds of miles from land, living full-time over the open ocean and getting their food from the water. The only time they return to land is during the summer months to breed, nest, and raise their young. One such bird got mentioned on last week's episode, the common murre. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. I shared a very brief description of common murres on last week's episode, but in light of what's going on with murres statewide, I thought maybe today I'd give them a little more airtime, in case anyone listening comes across a murre in the coming weeks. I will say that during the times I've highlighted the common murre during classroom visits for the bird calendar, it always makes me chuckle. Why? Because without fail, whenever I ask a group of kids, "What bird is that?" when I show a bunch of murres, the answer is always the same. Penguins. And there is no disputing that when standing on land, with their colors, body shape, and upright appearance, murres do bear a resemblance to penguins, though they are not really related to penguins at all. Common murres are medium-sized seabirds. They're about 15 to 17 inches long, with a wingspan of a little over 2 feet. They weigh roughly 2 pounds. They have a black head and back with a white belly. The face and neck is black during the breeding season, but white at other times of the year. They have a long, slender, pointed bill. Both the bill and feet are black in color, and males and females look alike. Murres are found along both coasts of North America. They spend their lives offshore or at sea, coming ashore only to breed. During summer or breeding months, they can be found from western Alaska southward to central California, and on the east coast from Labrador south down to New Brunswick, as well as along coastal areas of Greenland. They also can be found along the northern coast of Europe and Asia. Murres nest in really large colonies. The female lays a single egg that can be incredibly diverse in appearance. The color can vary, ranging from white to tan without any markings at all, to dark green or turquoise with extensive black or brown spots or blotches. It's thought that the high degree of variation in color and markings of common murre eggs allows parent murres to recognize their own egg when they return to the colony from time at sea. The egg of a common murre is unique in another way as well, at least when compared to other bird eggs. Murres lay their eggs directly on narrow, rocky ledges overlooking the ocean. No nesting material of any type is used. The eggs are simply laid directly on the rock. Murre eggs are pointed at the small end. When placed on a flat surface and pushed, the egg rolls around in a circle, preventing it from rolling off the nesting shelf. Incubation lasts 4 to 5 weeks, and both sexes take part in incubating, as well as feeding the newly hatched chick. The chick is covered in down and able to stand within 1 day. The parents will sometimes fly over 100 miles from the nest site to get food for the chick. 2 to 3 weeks after hatching, before it's able to fly, the chick leaves the colony with one of the parents and moves into the water. Common murres feed mostly on small fish, although a wide variety of sea creatures, including crustaceans, marine worms, and squid, are also consumed. They are absolutely superb divers and can go as deep as 600 feet in search of fish to eat. Perhaps you'll recall that puffins are able to catch and carry numerous fish in their bills at a single time. Not so with murres, which can carry but a single captured fish at a time. In reaching those incredible depths to look for food, they have extremely strong wings that they use to essentially fly underwater. Murres are also able to fly in the air, as with other birds, though they have to work hard to get off the water's surface, and their flight, well, it's just not quite as graceful as other birds. On Togiak Refuge, one of the very best places to see MERS is at Cape Pierce, that area of rocky cliffs in the southwest corner of the refuge where we take kids for the Cape Pierce Marine Science and Yupik Culture Camp. In fact, MERS, and other seabirds such as puffins and cormorants, are one of the big reasons that we have camp there in the first place, so the kids have an opportunity to view and learn about seabirds in their natural habitat. The Cape Pierce area does not get a lot of visitation in the summer, and that's actually how we like it. Common MERS are highly sensitive to disturbance by humans, whether people are on foot, in a boat, or in a low-flying plane. When disturbed, the birds may knock eggs and chicks out of the nest sites in their haste to get as far away from the disturbance as possible. The unguarded chicks and eggs are easy prey for gulls and other avian predators. Also, mammalian predators such as foxes feed heavily on MER chicks and eggs. As such, visitation to Cape Pierce is limited and requires a trip permit, which is issued through the Togiak office. MERS got mentioned on last week's episode because they've been in the news a lot of late, and not for good reasons. Thousands, possibly tens of thousands by now, of dead MERS have been washing up on the shores of south central and southeastern Alaska, with the apparent cause of death being starvation. MER die-offs aren't entirely unheard of and have happened over previous winters in Alaska, including a fairly large one in 1993. But this year's event is considered unusual in terms of numbers and concentration, and also the spread across Alaska. An estimated 8,000 were found dead on a beach near Whittier, which was described as unprecedented by a USGS biologist for numbers found in one location. Also, MERS, either dead or in very poor condition, are being found all across the state, from a number found around Bristol Bay to all across south central Alaska and down into the Panhandle. MERS have also been found in the past few months as far north as Fairbanks, something that's never been documented before. Keep in mind these are seabirds, and there's not a whole lot of open ocean found across Alaska's interior. In some places it was reported that there were what looked like skinny penguins walking along roadways, which would seem comical if it weren't so absolutely sad. Again, the cause of death for those found dead seems to be starvation. The ones that have been found alive have been extremely emaciated. I mentioned last week that they have conducted tests on a large number of dead birds, and those tested have repeatedly come up empty for things like parasites or disease. While scientists are still trying to get to the bottom of all this, it's thought that a part of the problem, if not the whole problem, is a much stronger than normal El Niño weather pattern, which has had a dramatic impact on the various fish species that MERS depend on for food. Warmer surface water temperatures have driven those species away from where MERS are normally able to get at them, leaving a bird that depends on eating as much as 30% of its body weight each day very much high and dry. Concern actually started to mount in the fall because the effects were already starting to be felt from that El Niño, and many MERS were possibly already in a weakened state before winter ever got here. The stronger El Niño also brought with it strong winter winds, which, along with their weakened state, is why so many MERS have been found so far inland over the past couple of months. The sad part is that it may get worse before it gets better, as the strong El Niño is expected to continue, and it's possible we will see many more dead MERS across Alaska in the coming months. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.